Welcome to the Frequency 49 Show. I'm Paul McDonald alongside Gary Rutledge and Brian Davis. Deepak's going to be joining us shortly. Hello, gentlemen.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Evening, Paul. I'm very good, thanks.
So the San Francisco 49ers headed into the Edward Jones Dome for a divisional matchup against the St. Louis Rams. After a promising first drive ended in a field goal to give the 49ers a three-point lead, the wheels kind of fell off with the final score being Rams 27, 49ers 6. Kaepernick was 20 of 41 for 162 yards, though he was sacked three times. On the defensive side of the ball, Navarro Bowman led with six tackles and six assists. With Carlos Hyde out injured and Jarrod Hayne put out to waivers over the weekend, the running game was left to Reggie Bush, who left the game with a torn MCL after being tackled by the stadium out of bounds. Mike Davis, who left the game with a broken hand, and Kendra Gaskins, newly promoted from the practice squad, who rushed for just 6 yards on five carries. After the game, the 49ers traded away Vane and Davis to the Denver Broncos in return for late-round draft picks in 2016 and 2017, meaning Trent Baalke is just four picks away from being able to draft an entirely new franchise. Someone needs to tell him Tom Brady isn't still available in the draft anymore. And because that wasn't good enough to fix the car crash that is the 2015 49ers, they decided to bench both their first-string quarterback and Sunday's leading rusher, incredibly both called Colin Kaepernick. Who knew there was two of him on the same team? That Blaine Gabbert is promoted to starting quarterback for Sunday's game against the Atlanta Falcons. What could possibly go wrong? Gentlemen.
After you, Brian.
Well, what could possibly go wrong? Well, it can't get any worse, really, can it? Let's face it, Kaepernick's had an absolute horror show of a game on Sunday. Missing wide open receivers when you're backed up on your own goal line. When you're backed up on your own goal line, I mean, that's bad enough to get anybody benched, isn't it? Quite frankly, there's absolutely no excuse for playing quarterback like that. And it's not just isolated to one incident, is it? Now it's becoming a bit of an epidemic of, you know, missing wide open receivers and going back to problems that we've been talking about for, between us in person and stuff for a long time now, in terms of missing wide open receivers, looking down his receivers. Just been a disaster zone, absolute disaster zone, particularly the last 4 or 5 weeks now, give or take, you know, or overlooking the Baltimore Ravens game.
I actually think we've got to applaud Tom Sula here. I think we all sort of said, let's wait until the bye week and, you know, if he's still not doing it, let's bench him. But the fact that he's, you know, had the balls to step up and go, Colin, you're not doing it now. I'm going to bring in Blaine a little bit earlier than expected. I think that's actually a really good sign that, you know, Tom Sula's not too friendly with the players and not afraid to make the tough decisions.
Okay, just 38 yards rushing on the day.
Yeah, and 28 of those were Kaepernick's. So, that is very worrying. But it's all right. We've brought in, you know, Pierre Thomas, Sean Drawn. So all our problems are solved.
Yeah, the O-line, again, talking of disaster zones, the O-line is just spectacularly abysmal. So did we really expect anything less? No, not really. And, you know, let's be clear about moving forward. Blaine Gabbert is not the answer. The team may even just be trying to save Kaepernick from injury now, potentially to save future trade value from him somewhere, from someone who may want to take him in the off-season before the 49ers potentially cut ties with him before, you know, his next lot of money in the contract kicks in.
We've now been joined by Deepak. Hello to you, Deepak.
Hi, Paul. Good evening, guys.
Hello.
Hey, Deepak. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Just finished work.
So, We're just talking about last Sunday's game against the St. Louis Rams. If you can call it a game, it was more a mauling, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that went wrong. And also, we also need to factor in that the Rams always raise their game when they play against us. But we got our butts kicked.
We definitely did. Reggie Bush is out, as we said, with an MCL tear. That's him done for the season. Were we really expecting him to be a major or an impact player for this?
I'm actually gutted about this because I think I said in the first podcast that, you know, Reggie Bush is bound to get injured throughout the year, but you do get at least four good games out of him. Unfortunately, we didn't even get one.
Did any of us have week 8 in the sweepstake? we must have all been close if we had a sweepstake for when's the most likely week that Reggie Bush's season could be over. Absolutely no surprise at all. And in hindsight, the team probably should have gone for Chris Johnson in the off-season, who was cheaper, over half the price, and is looking like the old Chris Johnson at times.
Yeah, Reggie Bush, I think if he was all that, he wouldn't have come to San Francisco. He would have ended up playing somewhere else. So I think we pretty much knew we were buying into damaged goods at the time of the signing.
It's the Kardashian curse, unfortunately.
Looks like it, yeah.
We've had an absolute ton of questions and comments come in. I want to go to the first one. Mark Lyon, where is the floor for this season now? How much can we go?
Well, we haven't had many arrests yet, have we? So potentially we've got potential to have some arrests, maybe some DUIs, maybe some off-field incidents. That could always spark another downward turn in the team. but then potentially the floor could be helping towards a future ceiling. You know, if we carry on losing now, lose out for the rest of the season, secure a top three draft pick, possibly draft a future Hall of Famer and win a Super Bowl in 3 years. Who knows? I mean, it can't really get much worse, can it? I don't know. Maybe if we sack a coach, is that worse or is that better? Maybe the players can get into an on-field brawl between them. Maybe, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of other ways that we can, you know, embarrass ourselves. Maybe, you know, maybe Jed checks into rehab at some point in the next couple of weeks. I don't know.
I think that'd be making it worse, though, would it?
No, probably not. No.
I think we were a better team when we had players getting arrested on a weekly basis than we are right now.
Bring back Alden.
But going back to Mark's question, and you know, and that is a really interesting question because we've got a perception that we're going to be rebuilding. It turns out now that we're not even rebuilding. We're completely rudderless. And without anything coming from the front office, and I'm going to refer to this several times, you just have to be prepared for the next bit of unexpected. And personally, on the playing side, we think that it can't get any worse. It probably can. By playing Blaine Gabbert, it's the first time in my lifetime as a 49er fan I've seen the team concede a game before it's even been played. And that's the signal that it sends out. And I can understand why they're doing it. I don't believe Kaepernick will be benched indefinitely. But it's clearly sending a signal that, look, we don't really want to win this game. We just need to give the other guy a break.
I don't know. We were waving a white flag pretty hard when we said that JT O'Sullivan was going to be our starting quarterback a few years ago. That was a...
True.
That was a pretty low point in the franchise history.
True. So we don't know if there's going to be a low point because what if Blaine Gabbert gets injured?
I do think it's a bit harsh on Blaine Gabbert, though. I know he's not the future, and I think Brian said that earlier on. But, you know, he's played for the Jacksonville Jaguars when they were terrible. So all these stats that have been wheeled out about his poor passer rating and his lack of yardage was behind an offensive line that's even worse than ours at the moment. So, you know, yes, he's not the future, but I don't think he's as bad as, you know, everyone's making out.
Yeah, in the last 10 years, he's got the worst QBR of all quarterbacks to have ever appeared in the NFL.
Which all paves the way for him to have a game where there's absolutely no expectation on him.
Well, if we get a touchdown, you know, he's winning, isn't he?
I mean, the only expectation on him is to suck. So even if he plays a half-decent game, he's exceeded expectations, so...
And he wasn't awful in the preseason, but neither was Jared Hayne. So hopefully one of those works out better than planned.
No, I think Tom Suda went out of his way to you know, praise Gabbert after some of his preseason performances. So maybe there's something there. Maybe there isn't. Personally, I can't see it. But what's gone on in the last couple of weeks, he hasn't got to do much to make
with the current players
a bit of an impact, has he?
With the current players on the offensive line in particular that we have, we're not going to win a football game with Blaine Gabbert under centre. I think everybody knows this. And it's about time that we learn to manage our expectations of what's going to be happening with this team, because really there isn't a win between now and the end of the season.
I'm going to stick my neck out and say that next week's intro tune is going to be Blaine is a Real American after an amazing performance against Atlanta.
800 yards, yeah. 7 touchdowns, no interceptions.
And Gary, you're back in the ring.
Literally anything could happen. It could be the situation that with a new quarterback behind them, the O-line actually step up and play. I've been wondering whether the O in O-line actually stands for open.
Well, yeah, if Kaepernick is this divisive figure in the locker room that is causing rifts between players and the players aren't performing because... you know, he's the starting quarterback. Maybe the O-line will bring their game up to a level which we haven't yet seen this season and look after Gabbert, and maybe the offensive coordinator can actually call some half-decent plays and play to what he believes, or what the coaching staff believe, is Gabbert's strengths, if he has any, and base the game around that and see what happens.
I've been somebody who has always tried to find, not an excuse, but some way of negating Kaepernick's responsibility in all of this. Not all of it, but part of the responsibility. And the O-line's always been to blame for me. Sunday's game, not being able to spot Torrey Smith. Graham Ross pointed this out before. Not being able to spot Torrey Smith open and not taking advantage of that change. Is that what got Kaepernick benched, or is it just, you know, is it another one of those things? Is it because the O-line wasn't giving him time to see what the defense was doing and to see the open receivers, or is Kaepernick's head completely gone?
All right, let's just deal with this O-line thing. It's getting tired and it's getting old. Every time, blame the O-line. That picture that's gone viral on the internet of Cap having Torrey Smith wide open, that's just one example of when the receiver's been wide open and he hasn't been able to get the football to him. And also, not just this season, but when times were good, when everything was hunky-dory, he was still missing wide-open football players. So this thing about the O-line has only got so much mileage. There comes a time when you look at teams that have also got terrible O-lines, like the Seahawks. But Russell Wilson, and I've said this again and again, he will still extend a play. He will still find a way to improvise and work with what he's got. Kaepernick doesn't have the head to be able to use his legs. And this is the thing for Cap, why it's so psychologically bad for him, is that he's been told that he sucks, not by people in the stands, but by people that pay his paycheck. And I think that's more than his ego can handle, because, you know, one of the charms of Cap and one of the reasons why people love him so much is frankly his ego, his character, his attitude, you know, the way he brands himself. And he's taken an overdose of humble pie that should have been distributed over a period of time. Instead, he's getting it in one hit. So I don't buy the O-line thing anymore.
I do think with regards to the O-line, though, we have got a terrible centre in Marcus Martin. And I think the sooner Kilgore gets back, I think that's going to at least give us a better chance, regardless of who the quarterback is.
Yeah, I mean, there were some Pro Football Focus figures which I shared with you guys earlier this week, and it pretty much shows that in three of the, or four of the five positions on the O-line, we are statistically the worst team in the league at, you know, those positions.
Okay, let's move away from the O-line then. Jordan McDonald, what do you think about Vernon Davis leaving? Do you think it was time for him to go? And do you think he'll improve in Denver?
Yeah, I think Denver, you know, do know how to use their tight ends. So I think, you know, a new lease of life for Vernon will certainly help. It is a loss for us, but he hasn't been the player he was, you know, 2-3 years ago. And, you know, interesting in this game, the game against the Rams, he actually was, you know, second quarter, he was quite involved in the game. So he got us a couple of first downs. So maybe the old flash will come back. But, you know, personally, I don't think we've got good value for him. I think 6th and a 7th round pick and a 7th round pick the following year is not, you know, what we should have been looking at. We weren't desperate to get rid of him. You know, he wasn't doing what he was doing for us. But I do worry about tight end going forward for us, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by it, because the rumours have been there for the last probably week or so that, you know, he could be on the block and he could be on his way out. And I think it's sad in many ways. We've seen what he's capable of, but, you know, like Gary said there, the last couple of years he hasn't really been anywhere near himself. And, you know, another reason that makes me sad, because Vernon gave me possibly the single best live sporting event moment that I've ever been part of, with the Vernon Post. I flew out to New Orleans to see that game, and it was absolutely amazing and incredible to be part of that. But can he prosper in Denver? Sure, you know, if Peyton Manning throws him the ball between the numbers every single time, but he's not going to be laying out, jumping 6-7 feet in full flight to catch a ball or catch one of Peyton's wobbly ducks, because that's not who Vernon Davis is. Vernon Davis needs to catch the ball with his body and then his hands to be a success in the league at the moment. And like Gary said there, I'm really not sure on the value that we've received. Can any of us actually sit here and expect Trent Baalke to do anything with those picks? I don't. Can he use them to move around? Maybe, but You know, I don't draft in, or I don't trust him to draft impact players anymore, unfortunately.
I think it was on the cards, and people have been screaming for this for a long time. So now they've got it, they don't know quite what to do with it. But also, we've got to think about the potential locker room spat between Vernon and Cap and a few other players when Vernon called Kaepernick out. So now the impetus is definitely on Vernon Davis to produce in Denver. He's got Peyton Manning there, okay? So he's got somebody who can get him the ball. It's time to see if Vernon really wants it, because we all questioned his attitude. We sort of gave him the benefit of the doubt, but he was never really 100% fit. But obviously, he's got a new lease of life. And the irony is, he could well play in Super Bowl 50 at Levi's.
Well, that's something Neil Jepson brought up. He asked a similar sort of question about Vernon Davis, and he said that he could well see Vernon Davis playing in Levi's in Super Bowl 50.
Yeah, anything's possible. I mean, Denver have a good chance. They took care of Green Bay, and Green Bay are clearly NFC favorites to do very well this year. So who knows, you know, but I think something like that. Vernon was always more successful when we were more successful, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think the chance of a new opportunity could well do him some good. But we'll have to wait and see.
Looking towards the draft, because that's the next big thing for 49ers, really, isn't it? The season's over now.
Yeah, get those YouTube scouting videos going.
Mark Harrison's asked a question. Are there any noticeable free agent centers, guards, or tackles to bolster the O-line that we're not talking about anymore, but it is time to rebuild after all?
Yeah, okay. Look, I get the rebuild thing. Even though our owner says that we were reloading this year, we're actually rebuilding. To rebuild, you need, say if we were building a house, we'd need bricks and raw materials. That's fine, we've got that, but we haven't actually got somebody who knows how to put those things together. Mm. So when we look at the plethora of draft choices that we've got, you know, somebody who knows this system and somebody who knows what they're doing with a draft pick could potentially build something for the future. I think it's safe to say that there isn't a high level of confidence with our front office that suggests that they'll be able to find any of the diamonds in the rough. You know, some of the lower choices that we've got in the lower rounds, that's where the obvious skill players are out. That's where you've got to really look for the diamonds that are hidden in the rough. But having said all of that, you've then got to convince those players to come to a franchise like this. And again, I think everything is going to boil down to this. Unless this wholesale changes in this front office, we are not going to be a very attractive proposition for anybody to want to come to and play for. Mm. So whilst we've got all these draft choices, and that's great, if we had somebody that knew what to do with a draft choice, you know, had the eye for talent and could convince them to come to a team that's got a potential future, and I'm very cynical of the front office, I don't think they have the competency to do anything with those draft choices. So even if we do play for a first-round draft choice, great, then what are you going to do? Draft a high-end QB, who's going to coach him? Look what happened to Kaepernick. Look what happened to Alex Smith. Look at Alex Smith, okay? What's the point in drafting a high-end QB if there's no way that it can be developed? Who's going to develop him? The coaches. Everybody's pointing fingers at the coaches. Who put the coaches in their jobs? Front office. So it's a self-perpetuating circle that needs to be broken in order for this franchise to be successful. So it doesn't matter who the heck you draft right now. You know, that's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've not spent any time looking at free agents as yet, but I think even our own Alex Boone is up after this year as well. So potentially we could be looking at almost a whole new O-line again next season, which could be, you know, another recipe for disaster, depending on who Balky decides is, you know, good enough for his system and the right player at the right price.
Well, maybe it's Jed's way of getting rid of everything that was in San Francisco and starting fresh with Santa Clara. So there's no evidence or trace of any Jim Harbaugh player or coach left there, and everything is brand new, or his. Who knows?
Mike Graff's asked a question kind of related to this. Is it becoming clear that there is a hidden agenda here and it doesn't include winning? If so, what is the agenda? And how does leaving San Francisco and dismantling the organization help Jed York in completing that agenda?
Okay. I've thought a lot about this question, and that's a terrific question, Mike. It's one that, you know, can be interpreted in a lot of different ways, and, you know, somebody might be cynical about it, some might be optimistic. you know, you could quite easily put together a conspiracy theory there for a team that was at an NFC Championship game two seasons ago, a Super Bowl before that, had everything going for it, and then all of a sudden, the mass exodus that we had this offseason, which was too strange to be a coincidence. Well, maybe it isn't a coincidence. Maybe it was engineered to play out that way. And unless somebody from the club at the front office level actually makes a statement and comes forward and says something, I think questions like the ones that Mike has asked are completely valid. You know, is there a separate agenda by the owner here? Is there something that he wants to do that's This is the foundation for, rather than to build a foundation on a team that's hopefully going to be competitive next season? Because from my cynical perspective, there has to be a reason why this is not just happening, but allowed to flourish and continue to happen. And I can see where Mike's coming from with that question. And he has every right to be cynical, and I think most of us do too.
I don't think, you know, the owner or Trent or anybody like that wants the team to lose. I don't think that's an agenda at all. I think, you know, there was a mistake made with choosing between Trent and Harbaugh last year. You know, the battle of the egos. And I think as we said in last podcast, some of the players might have, you know, decided that without Harbaugh there, they didn't want to continue playing. And we have been unfortunate this year with some of the retirements, some of the injuries. And that was always, it was always going to be a rebuilding year. But no, I certainly don't think there's an agenda to lose. I think that'd be, you know, horrible thought. You know, none of us would want that in our heads.
Well, I don't think it's so much as an agenda to lose, Gary, but I think it's more of an agenda to clear out the last remaining bits of evidence that there was once somebody who played for the team in San Francisco playing in Santa Clara. So everything's a fresh blanket of snow and this owner can actually say, I built this from the ground up. And I think Jed is egotistical enough to actually do that. Whether this is actually happening or not is up for debate, you know. And I'm glad that you take the point that he's not deliberately losing. I don't think anybody's deliberately trying to lose. But I just get the feeling that the club is being steered in a direction that nobody's really comfortable with right now. And nobody's really saying anything about it either.
Yeah, well, effectively, he's removing everything that's been successful for the last, 14 years in the franchise? Because it's been awful in the probably 8, 9, 10 years before, you know, we started, or before Jim Harbaugh came to town, really. And I'd hate to think that somebody with, you know, the DiBartolo bloodline would purposely run a San Francisco or Santa Clara franchise purposely into the ground. I'm not sure that there's really any owner that would deliberately ruin a franchise other than maybe Jerry Jones, who does it all the time. But I think it speaks volumes when, you know, an owner forces effectively his staff and his best performance away, and the only ones that remain are, you know, the ones that he can control, or maybe who won't stand up against him. Clearly, as Deepak says there, he's got a massive ego, and he's gone into hiding, and right now he's in danger of everyone turning against him, you know, like we've said. And some people are used to getting their own way and, you know, people kissing their ass all the time, unfortunately. And I think Jed's one of those people. And I think Trent Baalke is as well. I mean, these guys have just disappeared off the face of the earth again at the moment. And I think it's time, well, they're well overdue to come and make a public appearance, either on television or the radio, and let the Bay Area media or, you know, America's NFL media have at it with them.
Do you think with everything that's been going on, not just recently, but going back to before Harbaugh left, the rumours that he was going to be going to another team, and then the way he was let go, do you think that may have been at least part of the reason why we saw so many people leaving this season? The shock retirements. You know, every team's going to have retirements, but we had shock retirements as well, retirements that we weren't expecting from anybody. We had players leaving because you just get the impression they didn't want to be there anymore. Is this Jed's interference that they're moving away from, or do you think it's that's nothing to do with these retirements?
I think from a player point of view, I don't think they get involved in the politics of the front office. I think they, you know, they want to play for a team, they want to win. Yes, you know, they might have missed Harbaugh and might have been loyal to Harbaugh, but if you look at some of the, you know, defensive players, Patrick Willis, Chris Borland, who have retired, you know, you would have thought they'd have been, you know, loyal to Tom Sula as well, because everyone says he's such a great coach, he's been there for so long, you know, gets on really well with the players. So I'm not too sure whether it's the front office stuff that's affected the players. I think it is just a case of bad timing.
Okay, we've had a question come in by email. We asked for a couple of volunteers to record their question and send them in. We did have one come in from Kev Nail, and we've got that question now. Here it is, guys.
Hi, guys. It's Kev here. My question is, at this stage last season, we were the most penalised team in the league. This season, we've got the least penalty yards given up by anybody in the league. Has this newfound discipline come at the cost of being competitive for the ball?
Great question. Evidently not, because even though we've got the least amount of penalty yards, we're still not winning football games.
It's awful timing as well, because I think against the Rams we were heavily penalised. So, you know, the
yeah. record. I think Kev probably put that up before the Rams game.
I think he did, and then in the Rams game, 13 penalties for 93 yards. But I think his point was that, is there less desire this season to go for those tackles, and is it having an effect on the performance based on last year?
Maybe losing a couple of the bad boys out of the locker room has taken away something of the aggression of the team potentially, or is it just a complete lack of ability, or yeah, like you say, a lack of passion? Because we keep hearing all these things about locker room discontent. It's got to be, it's coming from somewhere. We all kind of mocked Deion Sanders, probably as we rightly thought at the time. You know, he was talking a load of nonsense. But all of these rumours are there for a reason, and they're consistent with everything that's been said by people for a long, long time now. And A lot of that nastiness and those players have been released. And yes, you can say that their off-field misdemeanours has forced the 49ers' hand, but maybe those kind of players not being there has softened them up a bit.
Again, going down the cynical route, Bri, do you not think that these rumours are in fact very careful and strategic leaks put out by the front office to create this sense of dysfunction? You know, this sense of dysphoria that we're currently experiencing.
I've got no idea anymore. I have no idea what is going on. But there's clearly problems. And I think it's at all levels. I think the front office, you know, Trent and Jed, or you know, Jed's minions are leaking stuff out. And I think it's the players are doing it as well, and probably even the coaching staff and coordinators are. Yeah. I think it's coming from all levels. It has to be, for the amount of consistency that's come in to different people at different times. You know, everyone's contact within the team isn't the same, is it? You know, everyone's going to have their own little people that they go to, that they get information. You know, I'm sure, you know, Mayoko and Barrows have got their sort of few guys in there that are talking to them. Maybe Jay Glazer's got one or two players, and I'm sure Deion Sanders, he keeps saying he's talking to people in suits. So clearly it all pieces together, and there's something massively, massively wrong with the team, and it is at all levels. And it's just trying to weed those people out and weed those players out and try and move on once they're gone. But yeah, there's always going to be leaks that you're never going to get away from it. It happens in all sports, doesn't it? You know, these rumours come out for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's the same in football over here. You know, this player's going here, this player's going there. Well, that's clearly come from somewhere at a relative level, because so often we see it happen a few days later on the television or in the newspapers or on the internet over here. So, yeah, it's clearly at all levels.
We could talk for absolutely hours on all of this, couldn't we? We could go on for days, but it is time to start the two-minute drill, guys. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Jesus.
Deepak, will Tom Sula last the season?
I'm sorry, can you say that again, please?
Will Tom Sula last the season?
Yes, I think he will.
Okay, Gary, were the team correct to bench Kaepernick when they did?
Yes, I think he took a lot of balls, and but I think definitely overdue.
Brian, can Gabbert do anything to salvage the season?
If he can score touchdowns, if he can lead the team on touchdown drives against both Atlanta and possibly Seattle, I would call that some kind of salvage, but will he save the season for the 49ers? Absolutely not.
Deepak, back to you. Where next if Gabbert bombs out?
Cap goes back in again.
Is that a good thing?
Well, I think it is a good thing because the being benched for the Falcons game and the bye week, you've got to look at it from how Cap feels. His brain must be fried eggs right now. I think the rest and being away and having the pressure taken off him certainly won't do him any harm.
Gary, can Jed win back the trust of the fans after all of this?
I don't think so. I think it's we're too far down the road now. I think he's upset a lot of people with the stadium move, and I think unless the team gets back to winning ways in the next couple of seasons, it's a road too far.
Brian, will Davis win a ring with the Broncos?
I think he will. I think he can. The Broncos proved me wrong this weekend. I thought the Packers were going to have him, but that defense looks absolutely phenomenal right now. If they can keep that defense steady, if Peyton Manning can improve, clearly he obviously listens to the podcast because I almost wrote him off last week, so yes, I think he can.
Deepak, who will be the QB next season? Kaepernick, Gabbert, a draft pick, Tebow, or none of the above?
I think he'll be a free agent from somewhere. Who knows?
And last one to Gary, will Bulky do anything with these draft picks this year?
That was the right noise.
Saved by the bell.
Absolutely love it. That's
big fat.
That's a really good week. Well, that would normally be it for this episode of the show, but as we were at Wembley on Sunday, we're recording this show later in the week, so we're going to carry straight on and take a look at the 49ers week 9 game against the Atlanta Falcons as if we weren't depressed enough already. What do we think, Deepak? Is there anything that we can get out of this game against the Falcons, or do we just go in there and do
it? Well, I think we'll get some sales from the concession stands. I think there'll be beer sold and food, and that's the only positive I can give for this team. We're not going to win this game, and in particular, I think, you know, yes, we have to play Blaine Gabbert, and yes, Kaepernick has to be benched, but it's the first time in 40 years for me that I've actually seen the team pretty much say we're not going to win this game and we're going to lose it and we're going to use it as a training exercise. And that's a watermark moment as a 49er fan for me, that the team is actually not going to be competitive. So no, we're not going to win this.
No, I don't think we're going to win this game. You look at those running backs now, it's a shambles. Pierre Thomas, Sean Drawn, Gaskins, they're nobodies. You know, Pierre Thomas is My everlasting memory would be Pierre Thomas getting absolutely destroyed by Dante Whitner in that game against the Saints. Sean Jones had, 8 different teams in 7-8 seasons in the NFL now, so clearly he's a nobody who's not going to do anything for us. Gaskins, it's probably way too early to write him off, but I'd not quite like to see Jarrod Hayne have a go in this game. Let's have a look at Gabbert, let's have a look at Hayne. Hayne's on the practice squad now, so it's going to be unlikely. And just to touch on that, I thought it was a bit odd that we, at the time, and very disappointing at the time, that we actually released him, because that was kind of like our last feel-good sort of person that we could cling on to this season. Obviously, luckily, he's come back, and he's back on the practice squad. But I'd like to see him go out and just say to him, we're going to give you 20, 25 carries. See what happens. If he crashes and burns, you know, let's not write him off straight away again. Let's have a look at him over the rest of this season. In terms of this Sunday, yeah, like I say, let's have a look at Gabbert. Let's see what he can do. Let's have a look, see if the O-line can bring their game level up. But are we going to win? No, can't see it. Can't see it, unfortunately.
I'll try and put a positive spin on it and say, new quarterback, new running backs. You know, it's a fresh, new, brave new world for us. We're still not going to win, but the good thing is we've got nothing to lose in this game. You know, we know the Falcons are going to come out. They've got a high scoring offense, so there's no point setting in for field goals. We just need to go, balls out. let Gabba, you know, have a free-for-all, try and get some yards, try and get some touchdowns, which would be nice to see after not seeing him for 3 weeks. You know, and just go for it. Hopefully we might see Hyde back in the game, we might see Bolden back in the game, and that at least gives him some targets and some options. Because, you know, like, as I said, I think with Pierre Thomas and Sean Drawn starting the game, I don't think we're going to look much different to how we looked last week. But as I said, you know, let's try and put a positive spin on it. Brand new lineup, and hopefully see some points on the board.
Yeah, I like it, Gary. It's true. You've got to try and keep some level of optimism. And these guys really have got nothing to lose, have they? You know, nothing to lose whatsoever.
Yeah, over or under 38 yards rushing this week.
What, by Blaine Gabbert or by the city?
Gary, if Blaine Gabbert rushes for over 38 yards against Atlanta, I'll buy you beer all day long the next time I see you.
Sounds good. As long as you don't do it wearing your Speedos, that's all good.
I thought that was what you were on about earlier, actually, when you said balls out.
Oh, no.
Bring some order back to this podcast, Paul, quick.
Yes. With Kaepernick being sat on the bench for this game, if this game is an absolute shambles, surely that's not going to have a positive effect on him, because he's going to look at this and think, they took me out for this. Is there any upside to Kaepernick being on the bench for this game at all? Surely he'd be better off away from the game altogether to sort his head out and just not have anything to do with it.
Got no one else though, have we?
Yeah, that's right. If Gabbert gets hurt, who's going to go in?
I don't care who goes in.
I think also maybe Kaepernick's seeing things from a different angle. He might you know, pick up some stuff that he doesn't see when he's behind centre.
Or working out with Kurt Warner. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's not done Kurt Warner's reputation for next season or next off-season. His quarterback camp any good, has it?
It's interesting you said about Kurt Warner. I saw him on NFL Network last night and he was asked a question about Kaepernick and he was very politically correct and said that, you know, still had some development to do and wasn't the finished article. But it was, you know, I think the undertone was that he, you know, doesn't think he's an amazing quarterback.
Hmm. He does or doesn't, sorry?
He certainly doesn't. It was... you know, very, very defensive and very much, you know, you can't change a running quarterback into a pocket passer overnight. And, you know, there's still a lot of development needed to get him to that stage.
Yeah.
In the last couple of days, we've had what's been reported as yet another leak coming out from possibly the front office that they were prepared to put Blaine Gabbert in earlier, but they decided to wait for the Atlanta Falcons game to put him up against a defense that they thought was mediocre. This is a team that's, I think they've got the 11th ranked defense in the league. Is this the front office throwing Blaine Gabbert under the bus? Because surely with words like that coming from the front office, the Atlanta Falcons are going to come and they are going to bring their A game on defense.
Yeah. Do you know, it is going to be really an incendiary thing to say to the Falcons that because we think you suck, we're going to play Blaine Gabbert. I can't even imagine that I'm saying this. Apparently the idea was to play Gabbert a week earlier, but they felt that with us being at home and everything, the fans might be a bit more appeased to see some sort of stability of QB play. Look, we don't know what's going to happen until we see Gabbert play this game, but you're right, Paul. The Falcons have got his number. They're going to go after him, and it's going to be a long night, especially with the porous offensive line that we have.
What we've got to look at is the following game is Seattle and the game after that is Arizona. So putting him in against those two, you know, first game is just going to, you know, shatter his confidence even further. So at least against Atlanta, you know, if he has a bad game, he's got the bye week to recover or the team can regroup and go back to cap. So I think it's the right choice. And I think, as I said earlier on, it takes a lot of balls for Tom Sula to have made this change now. And, you know, I've certainly got a newfound respect for him for doing so.
But do you think Tom Sula was told to make this choice? What do you think it was his own choice to make?
I don't think that, you know, Trent or Jed make the footballing decisions, yes, you know, with regards to draft picks and trades. But I think the picking a team, I'd like to think, is still down to Tom Sula and his coaches at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'd like to think that too. I don't know, I'm not convinced. I mean, neither would surprise me the way things are at the moment.
Right, we're fast approaching the end of the show, guys. Before we do, I wanted to change tack ever so slightly. Going back to Sunday and the IS game down in London. We were down there at the Green Man and we met all the our fellow 49er fans down there. And we had an absolute great time, didn't we?
It's excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to see everybody and, yeah, some good times had.
Yeah, and it was great for us guys to meet up in person, sort of look at what we're going to do over the rest of this season, and speak with, you know, like-minded fans in the Boozer, and just sort of all stand around chatting about what's gone wrong on and off the field, and try and condense it down between the four of us into a little podcast for them.
Yeah, chewing and, the fat, as it were. And it was great. We met some new fans down there as well, didn't we?
Yep.
Always good to expand the 49er fan base here in the UK.
Well, the game's growing, and as it grows, you know, people are beginning to adopt a team that they like the look of and one that they want to stay behind. And we also have evidence of people that want to adopt several teams at the same time. So, you know, it's natural that that there's going to be a level of interest within the 49ers. We've got iconic players, you know. Let's forget all the negativity to one side. We've still got some great football players on this team, you know, and they're brands within their own right. So it's only natural that the game is not only growing here, but 49er fan base here is growing. And I think, you know, if we can get this podcast out to more people, it's certainly going to add to spreading the word and the message.
All I can say is I'm glad we didn't meet the person pictured on NFL UK wearing the Seattle top and the 49ers tattoo.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
That's gone viral, that thing. I saw that on Twitter before, and that has gone viral. People in America have been picking that one up.
Yeah, and then there was the other lad, wasn't there, with the 49ers jersey and the Seattle hat walking up the steps into the stadium as well. I can't say it on air because there might be young people listening. But yeah, going back to positive things, yeah, it was brilliant to catch up with people. It's a shame that we can't do it more often, but unfortunately, the sport that we follow is still quite niche and not very schedule friendly for getting a lot of people together in a pub or a sensible time of the day. So, you know, I think it's imperative for us as a fan base to try and keep it up over next season. And if there are four games next season, or just a three again still, to try and maybe do something at all of those games. And if the 49ers are here, even better, because I'm sure we'll get lots of interest and certainly, you know, be able to organise, other meetups for people and enjoy those times again.
Right, guys, we've got to quickly wrap up this show. We are fast approaching the end of it. We need to just quickly cram in the pick six. I'm going to fly through them, just give your winners, and we'll fly through it. 6 o'clock, Rams at Vikings. Deepak?
Rams at Vikings. I am going with the Rams.
And Brian?
Yeah, let's go with the Rams, even though the Vikings are on a three-game winning streak.
And Gary?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Jekyll and Hyde Rams as well.
I'm going to go with the Rams as well. So that's for all four of us for the Rams at 6 o'clock. Raiders at Steelers is the next one.
Ooh.
And let's...
Raiders. They're going to do it.
Gary?
I'm going to say Steelers. Big Ben's back. I know Le'Veon Bell's gone for the season, but I'm going to go for the Steelers on this one.
Brian?
Oh, Raiders.
We're going to split that one 50-50. I'm going for the Steelers. Dolphins at Bills. Deepak?
I'm going with Buffalo to win this one.
And Brian?
Who's playing at home?
Bills,
let's go with the Bills.
And Gary?
Yeah, I went to the reverse fixture at Sun Life earlier in the season and Miami were awful, so I think Buffalo at home are going to absolutely obliterate them this week.
That's all four of us for the Bills. Next game's a blinder. Packers at Panthers. And Gary?
I'm going to go for the Packers. I think they're going to bounce back after last week's defeat, and short week for the Panthers as well, so yeah, I'm going to go for the Pack.
Deepak?
Absolutely agree with Gary. I think Green Bay will bounce back. They've just got a little bit too much for Carolina.
Ryan?
I'm going to go with the Panthers and make a massive, massive statement moving forward.
I'm going with the Panthers as well. I can't see them giving up that unbeaten record yet. The Panthers 8-0. The Packers have already lost one game, so they've lost their unbeaten record. Guys, the next one's the game that none of us wants to pick. Falcons.
Yep, sweep Falcons.
Yeah, well, Deepak, just say it.
Atlanta.
And the last one, Sunday Night Football, Eagles at Cowboys.
Oh, these two hate each other.
Everybody hates the Cowboys.
I'm going to go with Dallas. I think they lost narrowly against Seattle last week at home. I think Philadelphia are not as good as Seattle. I think Dallas will win this.
Brian?
Yeah, I think Dallas can, you know, grasp something from that game on against Seattle, so I think they'll squeeze it.
Gary?
Yeah, Dallas too. Dez Bryant's back. I know they're still missing Romo, but they did run Seattle close. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the Cowboys.
Tony Romo has been kitted up and training today. He has been throwing the ball, so I'm going with the Cowboys as well. That is it for the show, guys. Thanks to Gavin Sutton, Kat Vitorino for the two-minute drill questions. Thanks to you all, our listeners, for all your great questions and comments. I'm just sorry we couldn't get through all of them in the show, as we'd still be here when the Atlanta game kicks off. I can promise you we did read through them all, though. Thanks also to Andrew Mitchell, who's now looking after the Pick Six Challenge. And thanks to Audio Nautics for our theme music. Guys, it's time to say goodbye.
So long, fellas.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
On behalf of Brian, Gary, Deepak, I've been Paul McDonald, you've been the audience, and this has been the Frequency 49 show. Bye for now.